This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday called for a moment of silence to honor those whose lives have been lost in Ukraine and an address during the spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund.
Please, I ask you now to honor with a minute of silence the memory of the Ukrainian soldier whose death the world saw yesterday, and the memory of all of our people whose lives were taken away by the Russian invasion. Please.
Ukraine compared Russia on Wednesday to the Islamic State after a video emerged online showing apparent Russian soldiers filming themselves beheading a Russian captive with a knife. Russia's deputy foreign minister acknowledged Wednesday that detained U.S. reporter Evan Gershkovich had not been granted consular access 2 weeks after his arrest. The Wall Street Journal correspondent was arrested in Russia on claims of espionage, which he denies. The U.S. State Department has said it has sought consular access to Gershkovich since learning of his arrest. U.S. President Joe Biden is pledging America's enduring support to Northern Ireland as he marks 25 years since a U.S. brokered deal brought peace to the region. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
In Belfast, the president celebrated a quarter century of the Good Friday Agreement, while a new political crisis is testing the deal's strength.
It's up to us to keep this going.
To sustain the peace.
To unleash this incredible economic opportunity, which is just beginning.
Amid a political crisis that's left Northern Ireland without a functioning government, the president urged its politicians to come together and avoid returning to a violent era.
Northern Ireland will not go back, pray God.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
This is VOA News. Residents in northern Ethiopia's Amhara region say gunfights have erupted in cities since Ethiopia's government ordered all regional forces to integrate with federal forces or regional police. Maya Missaker reports from Addis Ababa.
Ethiopia's federal government has not confirmed casualty figures from the clashes and unrest in Amhara. Last week, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said regional forces would not be disarmed, but vowed their integration would be carried out by force if necessary. Ethiopia is emerging from a devastating two-year war in the north of the country after the federal government and Tigrayan forces signed a peace deal in November. Amhara forces fought alongside the Ethiopian and Eritrean armies against the Tigrayan rebels in the war, which left hundreds of thousands of people dead and displaced millions. Mayam Sikar for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump is due back in New York Thursday, not for his indictment, but for a lawsuit brought against him by the state attorney general while he tries to delay another lawsuit involving a rape claim. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports.
Trump is supposed to be deposed by the New York attorney general, according to someone speaking on condition of anonymity. The last time he was asked, Trump pled the fifth 400 times. The AG's lawsuit alleges Trump and his company misled banks by misstating the values of assets like golf courses and hotels. Meanwhile, Trump wants his April 25th trial with E. Jean Carroll pushed back a month. She's suing, saying he raped her in a department store dressing room in the 90s. He says he can't get a fair trial with all the publicity from his indictment where he pled not guilty. Trump denies all the claims. Julie Walker, New York.
The administration of U.S. President Joe Biden on Wednesday proposed new privacy protections to prevent women's health information from being used to investigate or sue people who obtain or provide abortions. Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom reports.
A senior administration official said the proposal by the U.S. Department of Health is aimed at protecting women living in states where abortion is illegal who travel out of state to have the procedure done, something research shows thousands of women are already doing. Fears of such investigations have grown after Idaho passed a law restricting some out-of-state travel for abortions. Major companies, including J.P. Morgan Chase, Amazon, and Disney, have said they would pay travel costs for employees seeking abortions out of state. Republican leaders have threatened retribution.
That was Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom. And a county commission in the U.S. southeastern state of Tennessee voted Wednesday to send a second Democratic lawmaker back to the state's legislature days after he and another colleague were expelled for disrupting the session with calls for stricter gun laws. I'm Richard Green reporting for VOA News.
Today is Thursday, April 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. reassures Ukraine of continuing support as thousands of Russians opposed to the war flee to Baltic countries.
I'll continue to convene the Ukraine Defense Contact Group to coordinate support for Ukraine's urgent and long-term needs. And we'll continue to swiftly deliver security assistance through procurements and from our own stocks as well.
President Biden urges Northern Ireland leaders to seek peace and seize economic opportunities.
The simple truth is that peace and economic opportunity go together. In 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement, Northern Ireland's gross domestic product has literally doubled. And I predict to you, if things continue to move in the right direction, it'll more than triple.
And inflation poses the biggest threat to Turkish president's bid for re-election in May. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin assures visiting Ukrainian Prime Minister Denis Shmyhal that the U.S. would lend military support to Ukraine's ongoing counteroffensive against Russia, quote, for as long as it takes, unquote. The visit comes as U.S. national security agencies are investigating the release of dozens of classified documents that first appeared on social media sites in March and supposedly revealed details of military capabilities of some U.S. adversaries and allies, including Ukraine. On Wednesday, the United States also imposed further sanctions on dozens of people and entities as it cracks down on Russia over its war in Ukraine. The measures target a private military company, a Chinese-based firm, and entities linked to state-owned nuclear energy company Rosatom. Hundreds of thousands of Russians opposed to Putin's war in Ukraine have left to find refuge in Baltic countries, where they have joined Belarusians who have fled Lukashenko's repression. Ricardo Marquina has more from Lithuania capital Vilnius in this report narrated by Marcos Harton.
Noyes MC is one of the most popular contemporary Russian musicians who has taken a stand against his country's aggression against Ukraine. His music, always critical of the Kremlin, has led him to escape repression. And his refuge has been Lithuania, where he fled with his family. For them, going home does not seem like an option in the near future, not without a radical change in the system.
The end of Putinism. Maybe not Putin itself, because Putinism might continue even after his death. All those people who are around him at the moment, none of them are good to me. So changing Putin to Prigozhin won't work.
Those who have fled Putin's Russia have joined the Belarusian diaspora in Lithuania, people who escaped the repression of the leader Alexander Lukashenko after the 2020 protests in that country. The Belarusian opposition says Lukashenko's forces have put more than 1,400 political prisoners behind bars. Its leader, Svetlana Tikhanovskaya, also exiled in Vilnius, tells VOA she fears that Lukashenko will join the war against Ukraine, which she says goes against the wishes of the Belarusian people. She says, our main objective is to prevent the deployment of the Belarusian troops in Ukraine. And you know, our soldiers do not feel like being at war against Ukrainians. We do not regard Ukrainians as our enemies. The old theater of Vilnius changed its name after the start of the war. It used to be called the Vilnius Russian Theater. Russian and Belarusian actors have found refuge there, a new professional home that gives them the opportunity to work in their language. But that's also a problem, as the theater has been heavily criticized for its use of the Russian language in its plays. It is something these exiles say they understand perfectly. So says Andreas Dorella, director of the play Trasia Pamaina. He says, culture means not hitting cities with missiles, nor destroying or bombing the theaters with 500-kilogram bombs. If that currently causes such a reaction among the people, I absolutely understand them. After the start of the war, Lithuanian authorities banned entry to Russians holding tourist visas for the European Union. Even so, they ensured their doors remained open to all political refugees, Russians and Belarusians. Ingrida Simonyte, Lithuania's prime minister, spoke to VOA.
This is a country that welcomes people in a complicated situation for their moral and political stance. It was like that, it is like that, it will be like that.
Vilnius has become a refuge for thousands of people fleeing from Putin and Lukashenko. The big question for all is, for how long? For Ricardo Marquina in Vilnius, Marcus Harton, VOA News.
President Joe Biden is in Northern Ireland, where leaders will discuss a 1998 peace agreement. The accord ended a quarter century of sectarian conflict in British-held Northern Ireland between pro-British unionists and nationalists who wanted to unite with independent Ireland. The deal is now complicated by the UK's decision to leave the European Union. VOA's Anita Powell examines what's at stake.
President Joe Biden often mentions his Irish roots, but this trip is no vacation, he says. As he left for Belfast in Northern Ireland, Biden stressed the importance of a 1998 agreement that brought peace to the island after decades of sectarian strife between mostly Catholic nationalists who wished to unite with neighboring Ireland and mostly Protestant unionists who wished to remain within the UK.
What's your top priority on this trip, sir?
Make sure the Irish Accords and the Windsor Agreement stay in place to keep the peace. That's the main thing.
That is a big lift. That peace has been tested by the UK's 2016 vote to leave the European Union, taking Northern Ireland with it and leaving the rest of the island in the EU. Analysts say there is bipartisan will in the US to see the island succeed. They point to two ways the world's wealthiest nation can encourage stability, with attention and with money. The situation has degenerated since the Brexit vote, and the Windsor framework that Biden described has not won support from Northern Ireland's pro-UK political party. They have boycotted the government for more than a year, threatening the delicate power-sharing agreement formed after the 1998 peace accord. Ireland's leader explained what's at stake.
We want to see the institutions of the Good Friday Agreement restored so they can provide hope for a new generation. And we'd like to see the people of Northern Ireland benefit from the rich economic opportunities available to them.
But peace is a process, Rees says. And so far, there has been progress. And for Biden, this visit holds personal history. Like most American families, the Bidens came from another continent. This village was the start of their very American story.
The Irish left here during oppression and famine, went to Scranton and worked in the coal mines and on the railways, really difficult jobs, but with pride and enthusiasm for a better life. And they were able to provide that for their people. And that has come full circle now with a son of Ballina, an ancestor of Ballina, becoming US president and sitting in the Oval Office.
On Friday, that son of Ballina will speak before residents of this small town, but his words will be heard around the world. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Anita. And U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken and Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin met with Philippine leaders at the State Department as the two countries began their largest joint military drills Tuesday amid increased tensions with China by Taiwan and Beijing's aggression in the South China Sea. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob has details.
U.S. and Filipino soldiers launched Balikatan military drills in the Philippines as leaders from the two nations met in Washington for the first such talks in 7 years. Here's Philippines Secretary of Foreign Affairs Enrique Manalo.
At today's meeting, we redoubled our commitment to modernizing the Philippine-U.S. alliance, recognizing that our partnership will need to play a stronger role in preserving an international law-based international order.
And U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin.
I'm excited about the ability to increase interoperability and look forward to continuing our great work together.
Those words are a far cry from the state of U.S.-Philippine relations just 3 years ago, when then-President Rodrigo Duterte openly disapproved of the military alliance. Greg Poling is the Southeast Asia Program Director for the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
The U.S.-Philippine alliance is really having a once-in-a-generation moment right now, where both sides have realized, maybe for the first time in a couple decades, that they really need each other.
The Philippines is among the least developed of America's military allies in the region, and it faces an acute threat from one of the world's most powerful militaries. China. Again, here's Greg Poling.
For more than a decade, three Philippine presidents now, Beijing has just refused to give the Philippines some breathing space in the South China Sea.
In 2012, China pushed the Philippines out of Scarborough Shoal, a territory well within the Philippines' exclusive economic zone in the South China Sea, and claimed it as Chinese territory. Both sides have militarized islands in the South China Sea and are in constant conflict. That's the Chinese Coast Guard telling a Philippine Coast Guard plane last month to immediately leave what it called Chinese territory over the disputed Spratly Islands. The U.S. and the Philippines have now agreed on U.S. access to four new bases in the Philippines, key locations near the contested South China Sea and Taiwan, another geopolitical flashpoint looming large in the region. Secretary of State Antony Blinken speaking after the talks on Tuesday.
Our goal is peace, security, stability, creating opportunity. It's not to engage in a new Cold War. It's not to contain China.
China completed 3 days of military exercises around Taiwan on Monday, which included a drill that simulated precision strikes on the island. The Chinese Communist Party has vowed to control the Democratic Island by 2027, using force if necessary. Carla Babb, VOA News, Washington.
Taiwan said on Wednesday it had successfully urged China to drastically narrow its plan to close airspace north of the island. Edward Buran of Reuters reports.
China has not commented on the no-fly zone, but South Korea, which was briefed on the plans, said the decision was taken due to an object falling from a satellite launch vehicle. Beijing originally notified Taipei it would impose a no-fly zone for 3 days from April the 16th to 18th. But Taiwan said this was later reduced to a period of just 27 minutes on Sunday morning after it protested. The development follows days of intense military drills that China has staged around Taiwan in response to President Tsai Ing-wen's meeting with U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy in California last week. It was against this backdrop that word of the airspace closure stoked fears of travel disruption across the region. When China imposed airspace restrictions during military drills last August, there were significant disruptions to flights in the region.
That's Edward Buran of Reuters. In other news, New York City unending war on rats has a new commanding general. Mayor Eric Adams on Wednesday announced that Kathleen Corady, an Education Department employee, has been appointed New York's first ever, quote, rat czar, unquote, part of Adams' effort to combat a growing rodent population in the country's most populous city. Adams, who has often expressed a deep hatred for rats, posted the job last year seeking someone, quote, somewhat bloodthirsty, unquote, and offering an annual salary between $120,000 and $170,000 US. The size of the city's rat population is not known. A 2014 study put the figure at around 2 million, or one for every four residents. Adams has implemented other measures aimed at what he called New York's, quote, number one enemy, unquote. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Residents in northern Ethiopia's Amhara region say local fighters have briefly taken over a police station and seized weapons amid ongoing clashes between the protesters and the military. The fighting was sparked last week when Ethiopia's government ordered all regional forces to integrate with federal forces or regional police. Amhara residents say gunfights have erupted in cities and authorities have shut off the internet. Maya Mersekeo reports from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
In the Amhara region town of Mazezo, residents say they heard heavy gunfire early Wednesday as armed Amhara fighters took over a police station. One resident who did not want to be identified due to security concerns told VOA the fighters were after a delivery of weapons. He says at around 4 a.m. there was heavy gunfire at the police station and bullets were raining down on their roofs. When we asked the police what happened, he says they told us they hit us. He says they first asked them to hand over the weapons without force, then came the gunshots, and there was a lot of them. The fighters packed up the weapons, he says, and left around 5:30 a.m. Protests and clashes erupted in Ethiopia's Amhara region last week after the government ordered regional forces like FANO to integrate into the federal military or police. While the numbers of those injured in the region's clashes could not be immediately confirmed, Reuters news agency quoted the mayor of Kombolcha as saying several people were shot there on Tuesday. Mayor Mohamed Amin told Reuters protesters attacked an army camp after false rumors spread that federal troops had taken Amhara regional fighters into custody. Witnesses reported casualties in the city of Debre Berhan, 130 kilometers northeast of Addis Ababa, though numbers could not be confirmed. One resident, who would only give his first name, Isaias, told VOA there have been ongoing clashes since Tuesday. He says protesters are refusing to let security forces enter, while defense forces are saying they will control the town. Isaias says Fanno and the residents of the town have taken up whatever they can, such as sticks or machetes, and they are waiting. He says Ethiopia's defense forces have heavy weapons. This is the fighting that is taking place. Residents tell VOA authorities have taken their usual response of shutting down internet access in cities like Gondar and Amhara's regional capital, Bahardar. An explosion at a bar in Bahardar on Monday killed two people and wounded several others. Aid group Catholic Relief Services said two of its staff were shot and killed on Sunday in Amhara as they were returning to Addis Ababa. While it was not immediately clear if the deaths were related to the unrest, they have underscored concerns about worsening insecurity in the region. Yunus Adaye is the former director of the Institute for Peace and Security Studies at Addis Ababa University. He says the integration of regional forces is needed for a lasting peace.
9 or 11 special armies. That is really not amicable for Ethiopia's economy, social development, and sustainable security.
Ethiopia's federal government has not confirmed casualty figures from the clashes and unrest in Amhara. Last week, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said regional forces would not be disarmed, but vowed their integration would be carried out by force if necessary. Ethiopia is emerging from a devastating two-year war in the north of the country after the federal government and Tigrayan forces signed a peace deal in November. Amhara forces fought alongside the Ethiopian and Eritrean armies against the Tigrayan rebels in the war, which left hundreds of thousands of people dead and displaced millions. Mayam Sikir for VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
With Turkey in the grips of soaring food prices, the Islamic holy month of Ramadan offers respite for some, with food meals and free meals offered to break the day of fasting. As Dorian Jones reports it from Istanbul, analysts say inflation now poses the biggest threat to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan's bid for re-election in May polls.
In Kadıköy, a middle-class district in Istanbul, people patiently line up for an iftar to mark the end of the day of fasting. Many wait for more than an hour for a sandwich and soup. According to this man, who wanted to be identified only by his first name, Ahmed, it's a sign of the hard times facing Turkish people. He said, "Why do you think all these people are waiting here just to receive a small food parcel? Unfortunately, everything is so expensive. The rents, the economy, the people are finished." The opposition-controlled Istanbul municipality is providing the free food. Nationwide, major cities under opposition control are doing the same. With Turkey going to parliamentary and presidential elections in May, members of the opposition are calling attention to the country's high inflation rate, currently more than 55%. They are blaming President Recep Tayyip Erdogan for his unorthodox policy of cutting rather than raising interest rates to control inflation. Atilla Yeşilada is a Turkey analyst for Global Source Partners.
It's devastating. Poll after poll, we see up to 80% of participants complaining about economic conditions. 80% thinks things has gotten worse over the last 12 months. 60% on average thinks they will even get worse in the next 12 months.
In a city market, local farmers try to sell their produce. Many complain about the lack of customers and say they are struggling to survive. That is what Meral says. She's a farmer who wanted to be identified only by her first name. She says compared with last year, there's an increase of 100% in prices. Even more, especially in prices of animal feed. The feed price is doubled and we have hardship in producing and selling eggs. The same is true for our milk production. It's extremely expensive. Such sentiments are shared by Yusuf Kavacı, a farmer with Akasya Agriculture. He says gas prices soared 100%. We rented our field and the rents went up immensely. the workers' rate was 150 Turkish lira. Now it's gone up to 400. One of Erdogan's greatest achievements was years of unprecedented economic growth, and with it, the creation of a powerful religious middle class. Analysts say members of that class were always fearful their gains could be lost if Erdogan should lose power to pro-secular parties. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter, who is to blame for the fall of Kabul to the Taliban. A recent after-action report from the Biden White House blames former President Donald Trump's administration for most of the turmoil that led to the chaotic U.S. withdrawal. We ask two South Asian experts about this assessment and take stock of Afghanistan's political, economic, and social situation. An update on Afghanistan next, this Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the Empire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of all events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinua Adofo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States strongly condemns Burma's military regime for dissolving 40 political parties, including the National League for Democracy, or NLD. The NLD decisively won the 2020 election in Burma, but the military staged a coup in 2021 and brutally cracked down on protests to its rule. Prominent elected leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi and deposed President Win Myint, are currently serving jail sentences in a prison in Burma on politically motivated charges. Many other NLD members have also been imprisoned. The military regime's purported reason for dissolving the 40 political parties is their failure to register under a new law for a general election, whose date has not yet been announced. The NLD said it would not register because the election authorities had been established by the country's illegitimate military council. State Department Principal Deputy Spokesperson Vidant Patel said any elections without the participation of all stakeholders in Burma would not be and cannot be considered free or fair. And given the widespread opposition to military rule, the regime's unilateral push towards elections likely will escalate instability. Instability is not what the citizens of Burma need. Tragically, since the coup 2 years ago and the crackdown by the regime, over 3,000 people have been killed, nearly 17,000 detained, and more than 1.3 million people have been displaced. The most recent human rights report on Burma by the U.S. State Department notes members of the regime's security forces continue to commit atrocities and numerous gross violations of human rights across the country. The move by the regime to dissolve dozens of political parties before a general election has been met with international condemnation. Japan said it was seriously concerned that the move will make it even more difficult to improve the situation. France called the regime's action another step backwards when it comes to freedom of expression and assembly. The United Kingdom described it as an assault on the rights and freedoms of the Burmese people. 2 years ago, the military interrupted Burma's decades-long and hard-fought democratic progress. The United States will not waver in its commitment to the aspirations of the people of Burma, and, as State Department spokesperson Patel declared, will continue to support efforts by all those working to establish a genuine and inclusive democracy in Burma.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.